Okay, could I ask our first panel, organised by the Green Economy Coalition, to join us, Peter Poshin and Mao, and I'll give over to Emily, Emily Benson, who's going to run this.
Hello, my name is Emily Benson. I work with the Green Economy Coalition. And the coalition has been around really since, I suppose, the birth of green growth and the green economy, for want of a better phrase. And we have watched and been a part of it growing up. It's sort of stumbling like a toddler towards Rio Plus 20. It getting through Rio Plus 20 and governments agreeing that green economies did offer a solution to the multiple crises that were being faced at the time. And let's just rewind back to 2009. There was the financial crisis. There was an increased understanding of what climate change was doing to our natural systems and the implications that that was having for the poorest. And also pervasive and persistent poverty. So green economy really came out of that sort of perfect storm, that triple crisis. Since Rio Plus 20, the green economy agenda has grown up. It's grown in maturity and in understanding. And so today, what I'm going to just do very quickly is really give a bit of a landscape of where that green growth transition is at, what is really happening. So, is that working? Yeah. So, having spoken to our friends at UN PAGE, which is a joint alliance, it's a one UN approach to the green economy, including UNDP, UNEP, UNITAR, ILO, and I think that's it. And UNIDO, I'm sorry. And they are helping governments in particular to develop their green economy planning processes. And having spoken to our friends there, I understand that there are now over 60 national and municipal and local plans for green economy emerging. So governments are taking this green economy transition seriously. At the same time, the international architecture around green economy has also evolved quite considerably. Just mentioned UN PAGE, but there are also other global actors working on this agenda, including the OECD, including the World Bank and the regional development banks, and also including new intergovernmental organizations such as the Global Green Growth Institute, which came out of Korea originally and is now an intergovernmental organization, again, working with governments to help them plan their green growth responses. The private sector is very much involved in the opportunities of the green growth agenda. For many, it's about resource efficiency and doing more with less, but also managing their risk portfolios. So we have some of the sort of bigger companies, the usual suspects, you know, the Unilevers, the Coca-Colas, the PepsiCos, lots of the consumer goods, beginning to look at what this green growth agenda can mean for them. You've also got quite a lot of the accountancy standard, the accounting bodies, so PwC, KPMG, etc., looking at the natural capital accounting element of the green growth space. So I guess the test of the green growth agenda, though, is always, you know, is the money coming in? I used to work in the media, and it was always the question, just follow the money. Well, in short, yes, the money is coming in. This is just one glimpse. It's quite difficult to do a sort of macro picture of green growth financial flows. So this is just one tiny aspect of it. These are green bonds, ostensibly. For those who don't know what a green bond is, it's basically a way of leveraging money for a big normally infrastructure project of some kind. And so you might get the World Bank, for example, issuing a green bond in order to attract investors for a particular green project. And this just gives you a scale, just a glimpse of what's happening on the green bond market as one case in point. And you can also see where who is actually issuing those bonds. So we've got, you know, it's not, you know, there's banks, there's corporations, there's the multilateral banks as well. So that gives one picture. But another of our members, the Ethical Markets Media Group, they also track, they try and track what is happening on a more macro scale for the green transition. And they estimated that last year there was 6.22 trillion going from, they basically analyze all of the stock market indices, particularly the sustainability ones, to understand where investment is going to. And they say that it's at 6.22 trillion. So not an insubstantial amount.
That's about 10% of world GDP.
So yeah, it's happening, I think. The green transition is happening. This is just a little snapshot of where some of that money is going. Now, this graph is showing you, is mainly looking at climate adaptation and mitigation funding. Okay, so that's one section of this green pie, as it were. But again, what you're going to see is it's quite a diverse range of actors who are investing in this. The biggest are the financial institutions and the project developers. And then you've got government budgets as well. So again, it's coming, the green funding is coming from all sorts of places, but primarily this is about private sector money moving around the economy at the moment. So, actually, I'm just going to, yeah, I guess the question with all of this is then, well, what does this mean in terms of informal markets, informal economies? What are people talking about when they talk about green growth policies or frameworks or etc.? So just to give a brief glimpse of what we're talking about, the kind of policies or instruments and tools that governments are talking about range from green standards and certification schemes and sustainable public procurement as one sort of section. There's also looking at the financial mechanisms, so green investment banks, or how to move capital towards green R&D. And then, you know, another section is looking at sort of natural capital accounting and how to better protect our ecosystems. So all of those, as you can imagine, have implications for informal workers. If you do bring in sustainable public procurement at a government level, that's going to have implications for informal workers. If you bring in big certification schemes, implications for informal communities. So we've heard from Marty how important the informal economy is. These are where the poorest live, trade, and make their livelihoods. So how is it being included in the rhetoric around green growth? So we did a little bit of analysis on the major three reports that have set the agenda on the green growth. So that's from UNEP initially, and then the World Bank, and then the OECD. And the good news is that the informal economies do feature quite prominently in all of them. So good news. But in the most part, those references are more talking about it as a reality and as a fact, rather than how the green growth agenda is going to work with or impact informal markets. We did the same for the national plans. We did a very quick analysis of how the informal economy is featuring in national green growth planning processes and plans. We just looked at 15 of them, so, and that's out of 60. But Out of that 15, informality featured at all in 6. It didn't, I mean, in the ones referring to Vietnam, Barbados, Serbia, South Africa, Serbia, Indonesia, Colombia, no mention at all of informal economy at all. And in most in which it did feature, it was again in the context often of sort of cleaning and greening. So I guess that's just intended to give a little bit of an overview of where the green growth agenda is at. And our question, certainly from the Green Economy Coalition and the partners, is sort of, if informal workers don't have a stake in the current brown economy, how will they have a stake and a voice in a greener one? So I'm going to hand over to Peter. Most of you will probably know Peter. He is a director at the International Labour Organization and also a member. The ILO is also a member of the Green Economy Coalition. So, Peter, I just wanted to get an insight from you. We've talked about some of the international heavyweights on the greener growth agenda. I wanted to get your insights from being on the inside of that and to understand how ILO on the green growth agenda is thinking about informality.
Yeah, thank you a lot. Good morning. And I think it is really critically important that we start to have this conversation and that the social agenda and the environmental agenda meet in serious ways and thinking through what the interaction in the future will mean. Because otherwise, we might be working at cross purposes and it could spell major damage on either side of it. We could lose out on the environmental transformation that is needed, and we could do a lot of collateral social damage in the process. On the other hand, we would probably also miss out on big opportunities if we stitch the two together seriously. We might have much better outcomes, both environmentally and socially. I'm very grateful to Marty for her introduction and for speaking about the fact that we do have a definition and an operational definition of what informality is, so it's not a vague concept. We do have a recommendation, which is an international labor instrument that is fresh, which calls for the formalization of the informal economy. In our discussion, I will vigorously defend that as something that is helpful and needed in the future. I would also point out that the Sustainable Development Objectives that have just been adopted have an indicator that uses formalization as a proxy for the quality of jobs. So formalized jobs are a good proxy for good jobs. So this is how progress in the future will also be measured. And there was already in the previous discussion some mention of what the informal economy is and how the green side of it may really be the result of the constraints that people in the economy, in the informal economy face, rather than a deliberate choice to have sort of a low environmental impact and small footprint. And it is true that the informal economy has many more entrepreneurs of necessity than of opportunity. It is true that the levels of productivity in the informal economy are often very low, and as a result, people in the informal economy are often very poor. However, it is very clear also from labor market developments over time that there is very little alternative to it. Even during the good years, the last decade in terms of economic growth worldwide have been the good years. We have spectacular rates of economic growth, and even in those years, in Latin America, for example, every other job that was created was informal. The formal economy does not have the capacity to create enough employment. So or people who create their own jobs will be with us for decades to come. This problem is not going to go away.
There's no conceivable level of growth and no conceivable structure of growth that would take that problem away. And we're entering an environment over the next few decades where growth rates are going to be lower, let's face it. And from an environmental point of view, that may be a good thing. So how are people going to make ends meet and find employment opportunities in a world population that continues to grow? I find it helpful to put sort of orders of magnitude against this other and then to think through what the implications are. If we take informality as a concept and ask ourselves how does it intersect with the green economy, I would identify a number of sectors, and we'll be discussing those in the course of the day, but they're very different. And they are very different size, so the implications of what we're discussing are very different. The elephant in the room, even in this room, is agriculture. We still have almost one in every three workers in the world working in agriculture and depending for their income on agriculture. Most of these are subsistence farmers in developing countries. We're talking about, for order of magnitude, 1 billion people. The world labor market is about 3.2 billion people, and there's about 1 billion people today living on agriculture. We have 40 to 50 million people living on fishing. Again, the vast majority of those are small-scale fishers in the Vietnams, the Ghanas, the Senegals of this world. We have maybe 50 million people working on forests and forests, or living on forest products. We have 10 to 20 million people working in recycling. And then we have several hundred million workers in non-agricultural micro and small enterprises of different descriptions. But it's important to bear in mind that we're talking of very, very different orders of magnitude. I mean, I feel very strongly about recycling workers, but they are not a very large part of the labor market. No? Farmers are. In many countries. Now, how do these come together now? I think when green hits informal, there is a number of very significant challenges and there is also a number of opportunities. The biggest challenges are that if we do nothing about the environment, the situation for informal workers is going to deteriorate even further. It is obvious that poor people depend much more on natural resources directly for their income. So the link between the deterioration of the natural resource and falls in their income is very direct. Farming is the most obvious, perhaps. If yield levels in sub-Saharan Africa really fall by 20%, which they might over the next 30 years, what does that mean to hundreds of millions of small farmers in Africa? We have seen people in Bangladesh, in Indonesia, lose their production facilities, even outside of agriculture, as a result of typhoons and floods and violent storms. So their livelihoods are completely swept away by extreme climate events. We're going to see scarcity. Most fisheries are overfished, for example. So here we have coastal fishers in Ghana who cannot make their ends meet, and as a result, they're selling their children to other people. They cannot feed them, and they obtain an income by selling their own children. If this continues, poverty is going to go a lot worse, and we're going into a downward spiral. Most of the policy measures that are being contemplated to produce the greening that we're hoping for are going to have, at least initially, negative impacts. We're getting the prices right, which means that most prices for inputs that people need will rise. We are looking at subsidy reforms and for energy, for example, or for food, and most of these are likely to have disproportionate negative impacts on poor households. We're looking at certification. Obviously, the cost of getting certified is much higher, so there's a market access barrier for small businesses. On the opportunity side, we could have massive gains. Giving electricity to all the billion, billion and a half people that don't have access to it, including many people who live in the informal economy, would completely change their lives. It would completely generate new business opportunities, value added, storage. It would massively increase opportunity at a very marginal cost to the environment. That's just one example. How could the new market opportunities, the new products become available? 30 seconds, if I may. There are a number of things that are happening that are showing that this is possible. The one thing that I disagreed with Marty's presentation is when she said that formalization isn't happening anywhere on any significant scale. I beg to disagree. My current host country is Brazil. Brazil has, over the last 5 years, formalized 5.5 million micro entrepreneurs as a result of an integrated policy package that includes appropriate taxation, access to financial markets, to financial services, business development services, and importantly, access to social protection. And there's a number of others. So what we need is to think through an enabling environment that would people in important sectors integrate into a greener economy or a green growth way, and to think through specific pathways, because the implications for agriculture are very, very different from those for street vendors or people in forests or informal manufacturers. So we need to get away from the big generalizations and talk about the specifics of how change can occur. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much, Peter. Okay, I'm gonna hand over now to Mao Amos, who is the director of the African Center for a Green Economy based in South Africa. Mao, we've heard a little bit of some of those higher level policy frameworks and conversations. I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit more insight into what informality means to you in South Africa.
Thanks, Emily, and thanks everyone for this opportunity. I think that the point I would like to make is that oftentimes we think that there is a trade-off between adopting a path to a green economy as opposed to the traditional development models as we know. But yet the evidence that is out there shows that actually choosing a path that recognizes low carbon development trajectory actually has got significant benefits. We've seen studies in Kenya that shows that by 2035 we'll be able to uplift at least 3.1 million poor people out of poverty because of this transition of these important sectors. In South Africa, the last 4 or 5 years, 8 years or so, they have created at least 500,000 jobs in terms of alien invasive species clearing by creating those new jobs in those sectors. So the bottom line is that the transition to a green economy provides significant opportunities, and we need to recognize those opportunities and capitalize on those opportunities. The other thing is that many governments across the continent and probably globally are grappling with how do we actually make this, translate this, if you like, rhetoric into action on the ground. And ultimately to address some of these significant challenges of poverty, inequality, and so on. And the informal sector really, really could potentially provide leadership in that direction, because it's the informal sector where there's a lot of creativity happening, there's a lot of opportunity to adopt these new technologies and so on. So the informal sector really needs to play a leadership role, I would argue, in terms of providing directions in these new models that needed to be tested. And I would argue that we cannot engineer the formalization of the informal sector. And our work in South Africa, working with entrepreneurs at the informal sector, shows that sometimes there's certain business models that operate at the base of the pyramid that do not necessarily need to be scalable. I mean, vertical scaling up. They would rather want to go horizontal scaling up, for example. So we need to think about that very carefully. And the other thing is that companies, big corporations, are always grappling with how do you close the gap to the last mile to the base of the pyramid. So they're actually looking for opportunities of how they can distribute their goods and services to the last person on the ground. So it provides significant opportunities for the informal actors on the ground to be able to plug into the mainstream economy. So whereas we cannot engineer the process, but there are also opportunities that the informal sector can tap into that will allow this trajectory to happen. So I would argue that it's not really an either-or argument. You know, let it take its course of how we position the informal sector. And in South Africa, that's really the experiences that we have been able to demonstrate. And the other thing is that I think there's so many lessons that the informal sector can provide for driving the green growth agenda. And one of those is that, you know, in the informal sector, like I said, that collaboration is, you know, is a key currency for that sector. And those are the kind of things that we're trying to grapple with in terms of how do you advance the green growth agenda. Because, you know, there are different players in the room. In a place like South Africa, there's no unified national narrative around what the green economy should look like. So different sectors are interpreting it in their own context. And so there's really an opportunity to bring together these various players to be able to chat the way forward. And obviously the question is, for a long time people have argued, how do we incorporate the informal sector into the mainstream, if you like, development agenda or discourse? And a place like South Africa really gives very useful insights, because we all know the history of South Africa. And because of that, South Africa's development paradigm is driven quite to a large extent by the idea of a developmental state, which puts a lot of emphasis on social justice, you know, service delivery, and representativity. So that this, if you like, demographic that has never really participated in the mainstream economy can be able to participate in driving the national development agenda. And for me, I think that there are really useful insights in terms of, for example, we know water is a big challenge. El Nino at the moment happening, the drought in the Horn of Africa, in Southern Africa, drives a huge, huge problem on the continent. And for a place like South Africa, I'm based in Cape Town, where high-value agricultural crop is a major, if you like, contributor to the economy of that region. But on the other hand, there's a significant need to transform the country. That demographic that had never really participated in the mainstream economy needs to be able to participate much more. So then the decisions that you have to face with, do we prioritize commercial agriculture? What happens to emerging farmers? And how do we allocate those scarce water resources? And because of the situation the government has been forced to deal with this informal sector, there are many, many instances where the informal sector is starting to participate in policy processes, because ultimately really what is required is how does the informal sector drive or participate in the national processes. And the water is a good example in South Africa where, because what has happened in South Africa is that water management has generally been decentralized to a local level. And they've set up catchment management agencies across the country. And there's an issue around representativity. How do you develop a vision that everyone buys into, so that you can be able to meet your water needs for the different sectors, but at the same time be able to drive, be able to meet the challenges associated with equity and so on. So in a nutshell, I think that I tend to have an optimistic outlook of the world. And I see that the informal economy really provides significant opportunities. Working with entrepreneurs, I would like to disagree when you say that, you know, there's no opportunities in the informal sector. We work almost on a daily basis with entrepreneurs, and we've seen so many of them capitalizing on those opportunities on the ground. And entrepreneurship, for me, I think is a significant tool of how to formalize those economies, how to catalyze those local economies, because ultimately what we want is the people in the informal sector should be able to participate meaningfully in the production and consumption of goods at that level. So for me, I'm very, very optimistic, and I think that looking at tools like, you know, entrepreneurship could provide leadership in how we actually drive the green growth agenda. I don't want to go into the debate around the informal sector actually green or not green, because I think that's not really the debate. Because if you look in the bigger scheme of things, in terms of contribution to CO2 emissions, the developing countries have contributed nothing. So really, we shouldn't be debating around the footprint of the informal sector, but how can the informal sector help us to transition into this world that we all require? Thank you.
Great. So lots of food for thought. You know, we've heard sort of how the natural, if we don't look after the natural systems, then that's going to impact informal workers. We've heard some of the opportunities and the threats around green economic policies. We've heard more about the kind of entrepreneurial arm of the informal economy and how it can take advantage of this green growth agenda. So I think now what we're going to do is we're all going to go into our tables and we're going to discuss two main questions, both of which are up there on the boards. You've got 15 minutes. The two questions is firstly kind of what does success look like? So in the context of what we've just been talking about, what does a green economy agenda that takes informal economies seriously look like? And the second question is, and what needs to be done to get to there? So we've got 15 minutes. Oliver will be doing the timekeeping. And please write down your thoughts on the yellow post-it notes. And afterwards, please go and stick them up on the boards so that we can see what everyone else is saying. And after that, we'll have a break.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you, panel. Thanks very much.